Welcome back. McLaughlin, Carroll, and Turpin. I'm Scott McLaughlin. That's Tom Carroll and Justin Turpin. Touch on the Celtics. We did a lot of Patriots last hour. But, of course, the big story right now is the Red Sox, who have won three in a row against the Yankees down in the Bronx. Blowout win Saturday afternoon. Going for the four-game sweep tonight. Want to maybe highlight a couple individual Red Sox players here. Starting with Trevor Story, who has turned things around for himself in a massive way. And obviously hitting cleanup, playing shortstop, a big part of this team, of what they're doing, of what they will do the rest of the way. Big game yesterday, 3-for-5, home run, 3 RBIs. He's got 2020 season, 20 homers, 20 steals. His OPS is up to 735. That was like under 700 for so long this season. OPS plus over 100, which is now puts him above league average. Racking up RBIs out of that four hole. Terp, you have some interesting stats on Trevor Story?
Yeah, no, so I was just thinking back to the beginning of the year, and if not for his $140 million contract, there was a case that maybe he wouldn't be in the lineup every day. And obviously the injury to Alex Bregman helped keep him in. But just looking back at his numbers from the start of the season through May 31st, because this turnaround really started in June, June 1st. So the first 56 games of the season, he had a 216 batting average, 260 on base percentage, 31% strikeout rate, 7 home runs, 23 RBI. The Red Sox were 28-32 over that stretch. Since June 1, that's 70 games, so a larger sample size, but 297 average, 343 on base percentage, 25.6% strikeout rate, 13 home runs, 59 RBIs, and the Red Sox are 43-27 over that stretch, the third best record in baseball. So his turnaround and what he's been able to do, finally living up to the contract, right? And I think part of that, too, is his first 3 years here, he only played 163 games. He's at 126 already this season. So him being healthy and him, you know, being the player that they envisioned him being has just been so big in this turnaround for the Red Sox. And I know a lot of people want to look at Roman Anthony, and he's been absolutely incredible over this stretch, but you can't forget about Trevor Story and how big he has been for this team.
I think it's crazy that we're almost taking Story for granted at this point. Like, going into these games, you're like, yeah, Story's there, and he's going to hit. Like, that's how good he's been for such an extended stretch now. And you hit on the key point. He's finally healthy. The first few years he was here, he could not stay on the field. And if you remember last year, coming out of the gates, he looked pretty good to start the year. And then he had that weird injury in Anaheim. And now he starts out the year a little slow. Took him a second to kind of get the rust off. And he's been clicking, man. And Cora, right when the start of the turnaround started for Story, Cora kept emphasizing, like, Story's finally feels healthy. He finally feels good about where he's at health-wise, and that's the key to where he's at. And that's huge for him both mentally and physically. And if he can keep this up, I think he's hitting at such a level for such a long stretch at this point that we're way past this just being a hot streak, right? Like, I think we're fully into this is a great season for Trevor Story. It needs to be a continued thing for this team because, not to go back to the trade deadline, they weren't able to bring in that massive bat in the middle of the order, right? Like, everyone has started to play well, and it has coincided with that trade deadline. But Story has been a key cog in this offense for almost the entire season, and they need that moving forward if they want to have a real playoff push this year.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't have a real cleanup hitter,
right?
For like a good chunk of this season, where I think I'm pretty sure opening day was Tristan Casas, and obviously he ends up gets off to a slow start and then suffers a season-ending injury. You would mix in like maybe try Willie Abreu or Rob Refsnyder against lefties, and there's a lot of guys like in and out of that spot where it was like, all right, you had Jaron Duran leading off for a long time. Devers, when he was here, was hitting second. Bregman was third. And then it was like just trying to figure it out. Like, Carlos Narvaez got a long run in the four hole, but then he kind of cooled off a bit these last few. He had a big game yesterday too, but had cooled off a bit to the point where there was no way you're going to keep him in the cleanup spot. So you needed something. You're right. They didn't add anything at the deadline, but now it feels like they've pretty much figured out like most games what that top four is going to look like, where Roman Anthony has run with that leadoff spot. Bregman's now in the two hole. Jaren Duran got real hot in that three spot. Tarpey mentioned earlier, like, he's cooled off again a little bit, but you hope he gets back on track. And then Story four, and like net, then you can mix and match after that and do your righty lefty matchups and figure it out. But he really has solidified it so much.
And the thing the Red Sox were looking for out of him when they got him were power and speed. And he's provided both of those. He's had a 2020 season, at first since like Nomar Garcia Parra for the Red Sox, I know, or from a shortstop. Xander Bogaerts came close a couple times, and he's the only player in the American League with 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases and 80 RBI. I mean, he's just been fantastic over this run. And again, I completely agree with what you said, Tom. Like, you're at a point where you're taking Trevor Story for granted because, you know, there's so much, there's more, I guess, there's more shine around the guys like Roman Anthony and Garrett Crochet. There's just, Trevor Story's just doing his job night in and night out, and it might be overlooked a little bit, but I mean, they're not where they are right now without Trevor Story.
He's a freak athlete. That's the thing I think people forget, and he'll flash that in the field sometimes too. And I think when you point to the 2020, that's a perfect example of the type of athlete he is. And even being up there in age, that's still in him. And now that he's healthy, we get to see that to the fullest extent. So it's been a lot of fun. I think it's one of the best stories in baseball right now. No pun intended.
Nice pun.
But if it weren't for Jacob deGrom, I think Trevor Story would be right in the mix for AL Comeback Player of the Year.
So you touched on a couple of the other players I wanted to bring up. Roman Anthony and Garrett Crochet, the guys who do get more shine, and deservedly so, because it is like amazing just to see some of the lists that they pop up on and the names that they are with. So Nesson had this Friday for Roman Anthony after he had that big home run Thursday in the ninth inning to add to the lead and really solidify that win. First 59 games as a Red Sox for a player 21 years or younger. Roman Anthony had been on base 102 times at that point. Red Sox record. Next was Ted Williams at 100. Like, you're on a list with Ted Williams.
Yeah, it's insane.
For what you're doing at that age. It's crazy. And then Garrett Crochet saw this Nesson had on the broadcast yesterday, and Rob also had it in his column this morning. But Garrett Crochet, fourth pitcher in Red Sox history with 200 or more strikeouts in his first 26 games in a season. The others on that list, Roger Clemens, Pedro Martinez, and Chris Sale.
Wild.
Clemens did it once, Pedro three times. Sale did it twice in 2017 and 2018. But this can lead us into a discussion like about Garrett Crochet's Cy Young chances, because it's odd. Like, all season long, Tarik Skubal of the Tigers has been the favorite, and understandably so. He won it last year. He's having another great season. But statistically, like, across the board, Crochet is right there in everything and is now leading the AL in innings, strikeouts, wins, right there with – so Nathan Eovaldi is now actually leading the AL in ERA. Because he's qualified. For a while, he hadn't pitched enough, but so he now has the ERA title. Doesn't have the innings that Skubal and Crochet have, but terribly. I think you had pulled up the latest betting odds when it comes to Crochet Cy Young.
Yeah, this is on Fox Sports. Skubal -145, Garrett Crochet +110, and that hasn't been this close for the majority of the year.
It's creeping up, man. I mean, when you have the performance like he had on Saturday, that's going to affect the betting market, right? Like, we have to remember, these numbers move based on how people are betting, right? So that's one way to be like, okay, just because the betting market says one thing doesn't necessarily mean that he's, you know, making up ground with voters per se, but at least the public perception is Crochet is creeping towards being the best pitcher in the American League.
Yeah, and I guess the argument for Skubal statistically you would focus on WAR because he still has the edge there, which I would love to know exactly why that is. He has a better FIP, fielding independent pitching, as well, so I'm assuming that's part of it. He does walk fewer guys than Crochet. In fact, I think he has the best walk rate in the majors, so like, I get that, but it's like the end results are Crochet's right there in
absolutely
everything. And yeah, that start yesterday, 7 innings, 5 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 11 Ks. Like, just dominance in a huge spot at Yankee Stadium. Are you guys, so I heard a caller mention this on Arcan's show before us. Are you guys at all concerned about the workload? He does lead the majors in innings, is going to soar past his career high, obviously. This is a guy who last year got load managed down the stretch by the White Sox because it was his first full season as a starter. I'm not really that concerned just because I watch him and he looks so good that it's like, yeah, I get, you know, hey, something might happen at some point, but he doesn't look overworked or overtaxed at all. Obviously, they gave him that little bit longer of a break a couple weeks ago. Cora said it would be the only time they did that, and it seems like it's just full steam ahead for him.
Yeah, I'm with you. He showed no sign of slowing down whatsoever, and obviously part of that is you're worried about what happens if he goes down because he's a big reason where the Red Sox are where they are, and if they lose him, then it's going to look a lot differently. So obviously you're looking like that, but he just shows no sign of slowing down, and I think they have had different breaks in the schedule where whether it's an extended break, whatever it may be, taking him out a little bit earlier like they did earlier in the season, they've been really, really deliberate on what they're doing and how they're managing him, and I think they've done a good job with that, and he's showing no signs of slowing down. I mean, when you pay him that much and he wanted to be a number one guy and he got paid as one and one of the better in the league, and you just have to let it go. Like, that's who he is, and he's shown no signs of slowing down. So I'm with you. I'm not worried about it really at all.
Yeah, it's interesting because early in the year, as you mentioned, it seemed like they were hell-bent on managing his pitching, right? Like, they're taking him out early. Like, what was it against the Mets? He was at 85 pitches. And
pitching well, too.
So, like, early in the year, it was something they were worried about, but it's as if the season went along, they realized, like, oh, this guy's a horse. Like, we can ride this guy. And he doesn't profile as someone I'd worry about when it goes down the stretch here. Like Chris Sale, you look at that guy and you're like, yeah, it makes sense that he's going to peter out towards the end. He's a stick, right?
Yeah.
And he's incredible for the first, I don't know, 75% of every season. But you look at his entire career, every single year down the stretch, he petered out. Whereas you look at Crochet, he's a massive, massive man. And I just don't worry as much physically with a guy like that. Like, it looks like he has the body to take a pounding when it comes to just throwing innings, eating innings, throwing a ton of pitches. I don't want them to overwork him. I like that it seems like they're always taking him out right at that 100 to 105 mark. I don't have the numbers exactly in front of me, but it feels like that's always the case. Like, yesterday he was a little bit over 100 pitches. So if he can stick with that and he can give you 7-8 innings, I think that the Red Sox are going to continue to keep that rolling. I don't see them down the stretch managing him. I think they're going to just keep it rolling with him as their true number one. And you got to feel really good as a Red Sox fan about where Crochet is at.
And just looking at what he does to the best in the league, like Aaron Judge is about to win his second consecutive MVP, third in 4 years. He's hitting, what, 326 this year? And he's 1-for-10 with 8 strikeouts against Garrett Crochet this year. That's the best hitter in the sport, and he just doesn't stand a chance against Crochet. It's just fascinating to watch. It feels like it's been a while since you've had an appointment viewing. You have to watch Crochet Day. It's so energizing to have a guy like that. It's for the lineup and for the rest of the rotation to have a guy headlining you like that. It just makes them feel so much better as well.
Yeah, they're not pushing him to 110, 115 pitches. Like, yesterday is a day where it's like, you could have done that if you wanted to. Like, 7 innings, he's cruising, 103 pitches, a game where Chapman and Whitlock are probably not available. Like, you could have, but they're not gonna, right? You're gonna, at that point, it's a 5-1 game. You're gonna trust what you do have available in the bullpen to hold. And then obviously, you blew it open in the ninth. But yeah, they pull him at 103. And Tom, to your point, his pitch counts going back 103, 94, 86, 105, 100, 100, 100. Three straight were exactly 100. 98, 89, 103. Like, you can keep going. He's only gone 110 twice all season. So they've clearly found this range. And, like, he's so efficient, so dominant that that's getting you 7 innings consistently.
Right,
so,
exactly. It's like that 100-ish mark always coincides with, like, the end of the seventh.
Yeah.
So if you can have your Whitlock, Chapman set up and again, have those guys ready to go and healthy with Crochet, like, come postseason, you got to be feeling really good about your game one, game four, game seven starters throughout that entire run if they're able to make a deep run here.
To the seven inning mark that you guys just referenced, 12 starts that have gone at least seven innings this season, most in Major League Baseball.
Yep.
Consistently dominant. It's incredible to watch.
It's been a lot of fun for sure. And that obviously was exactly what the Red Sox needed this offseason. They went out and got him. So we talked earlier about, you know, don't want to give Breslow much credit for the deadline, a little quiet, even Nathaniel Lowe just kind of falls into his lap. You got to give him credit for the Crochet trade. Just a great, great.
And that's
move.
A deal that Bloom wouldn't have made. He wouldn't have been willing to pay.
Like Kyle Teal? No way.
No way. And he's playing now, yeah. So good for him. But, like, Bloom wouldn't have made that deal. So you have to give credit to Breslow for doing that and then getting the extension done as well. So, I mean, you have this guy at the front of your rotation for years to come, and that's going to make fans feel good.
All right, 617-779-7937. That's the number to call or text. Scott McLaughlin, Tom Carroll, Justin Turpin. Tom has you trending behind the glass, and then we will be back with more Red Sox-Yankees talk as we get ready for tonight. Welcome back. Scott McLaughlin here with Tom Carroll and Justin Turpin. You guys are Oasis fans?
I like their, like, you know, big stuff. I don't want to say that I'm, like, hardcore, but I like them, yeah. I mean, if I had the means, I would probably pay a good amount of money to go see them in concert.
I was strongly considering it, yeah. Yep. I really like Oasis. So I was looking at, like, the New York and Toronto shows, but didn't quite line up. I was talking to Razor Andrew Raycroft at Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon this week. He went over and saw them in London.
Oh, that must
so
be sick.
I was like, yeah, I'm super jealous of that. This no Razor here. This is not Sunday Skate, even though I am hosting. But we're talking Red Sox Yankees, guys, and Red Sox going for the sweep tonight. No Red Sox lineup yet. We know the pitching matchups, Dustin May against Carlos Rodon going for the Yankees, which is one of those matchups that so the Yankees lineup is out, and just of note, no Anthony Volpe.
Not
after,
shocking.
The brutal series he has had and
send
getting,
him down.
Getting booed by the home crowd at Yankee Stadium. Yeah, that's a tough one. He was one of those guys that, like, they thought, I don't know, if, I'm not going to make a Roman Anthony comparison, but they thought, like, this guy is a huge part of their future and just not panning out. He just has not been very good at the big league level. He's made some critical mistakes in this series in particular. So no opportunity for Yankees fans to boo him more tonight. But this is one of those pitching matchups where you look at it and you're like, well, advantage Yankees, because Rodon's having a really good year. And Dustin May has mostly struggled in L.A. We mentioned his last two starts since here have been pretty good. Six innings, no runs. Six innings, two runs. But I kind of... We've seen this a couple times from the Red Sox where it looks lopsided on paper and they find a way to get a win. So sweep absolutely in play, guys.
Yeah, I think he's been great. Obviously a much smaller sample size, but his three starts with Boston, 2.87 ERA, five earned runs in 15 and two-thirds innings and with 17 strikeouts and four walks. He had a 4.85 ERA in Los Angeles. So obviously a much smaller sample size, three games compared to 19, but you like what you've seen from him early on here, and he's never actually faced the Yankees. He's pitched in a lot of big spots. Obviously, the Dodgers played the Yankees the World Series last year. He has never faced the Yankees, so first taste here of Yankee Stadium.
And if they are able to pull off the sweep, and I know you and I were talking about this before the show, it's like one of the more historic runs they've been on in a single season against the Yankees, because if they pull off this streak here, it would be, what is it, 8-0 so, this season against the Yankees, and they haven't done that in, like,
they've won
over 100 years?
So, yeah. So that they're 8-1 in the year, so this would be 9-1.
And
it would be nine straight wins. They lost the first matchup this year, and Red Sox have won everything since.
Yeah, what are those numbers?
So for the series itself, it would be Boston's first four-game sweep over the Yankees since August of 2018. You know what else happened in 2018. But that was at Fenway. The first one in the Bronx since a five-game sweep in July of 1939.
I remember that one.
Yeah.
So it was, we're talking pre-U.S. involvement of World War II since the last time the Red Sox have been this dominant against the Yankees at Yankee Stadium.
And a win tonight would give them their longest single-season win streak against the Yankees since 1912, the year the Titanic set sail and Fenway Park was built, which was 14 straight. They also had...
And the Red Sox also won the World
won
Series.
The World Series both years, yeah.
Oh, so, we on to something here?
They had a 2000... In 2009, they also won 8 straight, which they're at tonight. So tonight, with a win tonight, you're looking at something that hasn't been done since 1912. Not many things can be said about that.
That's crazy.
Now, I will say the only thing that kind of makes me, obviously you're excited about that, but under old playoff formats, even just the four teams make it the one wildcard spot, something like this would be a knockout blow. Like, the team that suffers that four-game sweep would be done. This would be the end of their season. Instead, because we now have a six-team field, Yankees could lose tonight, get swept in four at home by the Red Sox, and still be in a playoff spot. And, like, just need to bounce. They have a fairly easy schedule coming up. So, like, they would just need to bounce back. And then maybe your dominance continues over them in the playoffs, but you still have to beat them again. Like, this isn't a knockout blow for the season. It's not going to knock the Yankees out of the playoffs. So I do kind of miss those days where some of these August, September series, if they go lopsided like this, would feel like the playoffs, because it would feel like you're knocking that team out. And you don't have that feel anymore.
And for the Red Sox, I mean, regardless of the sweep or whatnot, if you take three or four against the Yankees, you have to build on it now coming up over the next week. You got four against Baltimore and then three against Pittsburgh, a weekend series at home. You have to take advantage of this. I think at times, as much as we've been praising them for answering the call, they've then stumbled a little bit after and lost some games they probably should have won. So this is another opportunity for them to get on one of those real hot streaks, and this would be a good time to do it. Obviously, the playoff standings are starting to tighten up a little bit. They're starting to take more clear picture and more shape. So this would be a good time to really get on a heater here.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, Terp, it's Baltimore and then it's Pittsburgh. But if you look at the rest of the remaining schedule, it's 31 games. 22 of those 31 games are against teams with a 500 record or worse.
Which is crazy because they're at, 20th for strength of schedule? It's like about a 500 even for the remainder of the way. So
right, and a lot of that has to do with the last part of their schedule being at Toronto, and then they have a home series against the Tigers. Everything else is extremely winnable for this team. And it goes back to the Dustin May point that you made at the beginning of the segment. If you can have a fourth starter that can give you six innings, you'll take that night and day, every day of the week. And for a schedule like they have remaining, to have someone that can be reliable and eat innings like that, it's going to be huge against these kind of, we'll call it bad teams, where you just need to have your starter go deep and you're going to have a chance to win those games.
And I think that stretch that you just mentioned too, with closing the season against Toronto and then Detroit, like, that's exactly why you want to build up games right now in the wild card standings. You don't want to be messing around and being in a close battle there going against those two teams in the final six games of the season. You'd rather kind of know where you are, have a big enough lead that you feel comfortable entering those series against those good teams.
Yeah, I would say, like, just as a fan, I hope those series mean something. Now, it'd be great if you're the Red Sox and you've solidified your playoff spot and you know you're going to have home field that first round. But those are two marquee series on the schedule. And it looks like the Tigers, they're going to have the AL Central well wrapped up by then. We'll see if they're competing for seeding or where that stands. The Blue Jays could potentially have the AL East wrapped up. And if the Red Sox can put more distance between themselves and the Yankees and the Mariners behind them, like, they could be locked into the four seed already and be that first wild card. So just as a fan who, like, wants those kind of marquee series to mean something, I hope there's something up for grabs and those teams haven't all sort of separated and already been locked into their spots. And now they're, you know, resting guys and whatnot. So I kind of wish those years were a little earlier, but obviously you can't. There's no way to plan for that, so that it is what it is.
And you talk about the knockout blow like it used to be, which was awesome, and it was really great when it was the Red Sox delivering those knockout blows. We still might have that with the Yankees here. Like, this might be the first big punch, and then the boxer goes to the corner and, you know, gets water squirted in his face. But six series from now, you play the Yankees again at home at Fenway. A really strong three-game sweep of the Yankees as they continue to sputter here, that really might be the knockout blow for New York here. So let's see this team continue to build off of this hopefully four-game sweep, but even if it's 3 of 4, and then when you see the Yankees in a few weeks, you can really deliver that nail in the coffin, which is always just so sweet.
And I think they've already made enough of a statement this weekend through this series, right? You're winning in different ways. You're winning close games. You're winning blowouts. You're getting contributions from everyone on your pitching staff and everyone in your lineup. But there's something about going into Yankee Stadium on a Sunday night baseball game and sweeping them in front of a national TV audience on Fox, sweeping them and taking a four-game series sweep. There's something to be said about that, and like this team can really send a message and be like, hey, we're here, and this is for real.
And again, only place you can hear you can get a local call of tonight's game is on WEI, 93.7 FM, Red Sox Radio Network, Odyssey app if you're in New England. If you guys can indulge me just for a minute on the Boston Bruins. Wanted to mix them in at some point. So I don't know if people saw this. I fully understand if people are not going out of their way to seek Bruins content at this point in the summer. But The Athletic had an interesting survey earlier this week, and it was surveying fans and their confidence level in their front office. So this is not The Athletic's rankings. It's survey of fans of that team. Want to guess where did you guys see this? Either one of you?
I did not see this.
Okay. You want to guess where the Boston Bruins came in out of 32 teams in the NHL in confidence in the front office among fans?
Among Boston fans?
Among Boston fans.
Can I be as bold as to say dead last?
I'd be pretty close to that. I won't go dead last. I go 28.
You guys are right around it. 30th out of 32. So, and the reason I bring this up, obviously, that's interesting. The Bruins, I think Bruins fans, Boston fans in general, tend to be maybe more down in their front offices than people around the league are. And that is true in this case, where I think Don Sweeney is more respected around the league than he is here. It's why he was general manager of Team Canada for Four Nations. It's why he'll be on the staff for the Olympics coming up this year. But I don't blame fans at all for being that down on this front office the way that these last year especially went. But the free agency moves last summer that didn't work out, the Elias Lindholm contract, Nikita Zadorov, I think was mostly fine for what they're paying him, but obviously wasn't a grand slam. The Jeremy Swayman contract did not look good year one. And then this offseason, pretty underwhelming summer for them. They were not able to make the kind of big addition that I think a lot of Bruins fans were hoping for with the cap space that they had. And instead, they end up settling for a lot of depth signings, overpaid for Tanner Janot on a 5-year contract, a guy who should be on their fourth line, might have to be on their third line to start. So I get where this comes from. And then I contrast it with things we've heard from Charlie Jacobs, team CEO, who joined WEI Afternoons at the Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon. By the way, quick thank you to everyone who donated and partook in the Radio Telethon this year. Record $5.76 million raised. Just incredible. But he goes on WEI Afternoons and says that he thinks fans are going to be pleasantly surprised this season and strikes a very optimistic tone, which on the one hand, I get. But then I also think about comments he made at the end of last season where, in defending Don Sweeney and Cam Neely, said he didn't understand why any fans would want them fired. And I just think there remains this massive disconnect between kind of how ownership and the front office themselves think about the job they're doing and what fans think of the job that they're doing. And if they do pleasantly surprise, then, okay, they can all take a deep breath and sigh of relief. Yeah, let's play Charlie Jacobs here.
So how's this Durham era going so far? And what should fans look forward to or expect from this next generation of the Bruins?
So Marco is incredible. He is quite a communicator, and he's a passionate communicator. And he's got he has the experience of playing under a lot of very system-oriented coaches while he was a player. Mm-hmm. And he will tell you about his journey to sort of why he's here today as a National Hockey League head coach, what it took. He knew or at least he had a pretty good idea of what it was going to take in terms for him to skill up enough to be able to, sort of step on that bench and lead a team on at a National Hockey League level. And it's quite a journey, and it's quite a story. And I think he's going to be. I think all of us can be plenty pleasantly surprised by what we see on the ice.
So there you go. So a lot of that about Marco Sturm, obviously the new coach, who, by the way, I do think is going to be a good coach. I don't know if he has the roster to take this team to anything better than being in the playoff hunt. Like, to me, that's kind of best case scenario for this season. But that last part about fans will be pleasantly surprised. And I don't know if they know quite what they're setting themselves up for if this season goes south again and looks like last year or something only slightly better than that.
I think it just speaks to a disconnect, like you mentioned, of ownership not realizing that things should not be where they're at right now. And I think a perfect example of that is when we did a write-up on this story, Charlie Jacobs says fans are going to be pleasantly surprised. The bulk of the comments on it were, oh, are we going to be pleasantly surprised? Are you guys selling the team? Like, that was what people wanted out of this. They weren't like, oh, wow, Charlie Jacobs thinks they're going to be good. What did he have to say? Like, why are we going to be pleasantly surprised? It was, oh, we're going to be pleasantly surprised because you're selling finally? Great. Like, there's a disconnect from how the front office and ownership thinks they're doing, pointing back to things way in the past to try and excuse things that are happening now, and then what the fans actually are seeing and thinking about how this team is and where they're situated when they see, their captain get traded at the trade deadline and he goes out and wins a Stanley Cup that summer and signed the big extension. It's just, we're in a weird spot here in Bruins land.
And a lot of fans were not happy about those extensions giving out to the front office.
Correct.
Yeah. So, yeah, Don Sweeney signed a 2-year extension this spring. That was while the coaching search was happening. And I do think part of why that happened at that time was that was a question among at least some of the coaches they were talking to was, well, if Don Sweeney only has 1 year left, if he gets fired, does that mean I'm gone after 1 year? Like, what is my security here? So that's part of it. I think Sweeney, he was signed for one more year. Now he's 2 years on top of that. I think realistically that probably buys him 2 years because you might buy out the final year. Most teams aren't going to buy out 2 years on a GM, but yeah, it is fascinating times. And they, look, they do have some promising prospects. James Hagans, I think, is going to be really good. The kid they took 7th overall in this year's draft, who will be going back to BC for his sophomore season. I think he's going to be really good. I think he may very well be the number one center of the future that they so desperately need. But they still need so much more. Like, they are still lacking, even if you add Hagans in a year from now, two other top six scorers. I mean, those aren't easy to come across, especially in a rising cap environment in the NHL, where during the COVID years, there was a flat cap and more than half the league was running into cap issues and had to get rid of good players. Well, now the cap's going up and teams are keeping all their good players. No one got to free agency this year, so you can't really rely on, oh, well, we'll have money to sign someone next year. Okay, they have to get there first, and then they have to want to pick you. So they have a lot of work to do.
They need to start hitting in the draft.
Like we talked about with the Patriots.
Yep.
The best way to get back on track during a rebuild or a retool, whatever you want to call it, is hitting in the draft. That's the key to doing it, and if you can't do that, you're going to be spinning your tires a little bit like we've seen with the Patriots.
All right, we have the final segment of our show, guys. 3 hours.
Flew by.
Scott McLaughlin, Justin Turpin, Tom Carroll. We're going to wrap up. We can do Red Sox and Yankees. We can hit Patriots again. You can still get in 617-779-7937. We will be back to give some final thoughts leading into Red Sox Yankees tonight. Little Goo Goo Dolls?
I saw them in concert at URI in 2010. And I wasn't even really a big Goo Goo Dolls fan. It was just like something to do. I drove down from, I was going to school in Worcester at the time, and weird night, weird vibe. Like, people were, couldn't decide if they wanted to like get up or like cry when they hear songs like this.
Right, yeah.
So, I don't know.
Never seen the Goo Goo Dolls. But yeah, I mean, like, as a 90s kid, obviously, you loved them at the time. All right, Scott McLaughlin here with Tom Carroll and Justin Turbin. Final segment of our show, but Dan Ball coming up next. He'll take you all the way up till Red Sox pregame at 6:10. Red Sox Yankees tonight at 7:10. Will Fleming and Lou Maloney on the call here on WEEI. And we got a Red Sox call on the board, so let's squeeze this in before we wrap up and go to Will in New Jersey. What's up, Will?
Hey, what's going on, boys?
Not much. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Getting pumped up for the season tonight.
Yes.
Hey, I just wanted to ask you guys if you guys thought that the start of this Roman Empire coming into the Bronx, conquering Yankee Stadium, just completely dominating and calling game over on Thursday night with that home run. If you guys thought that this start of the Roman Empire is also going to coincide with the start of the decline of the Aaron Judge era in New York.
Ooh.
Just what are your thoughts, boys?
I like it.
All right. Thanks, Will.
I'm into it.
So I was going to say, like, maybe I can maybe see the decline of a certain era of Yankees baseball, of the evil empire. I don't know if it's going to be the start of the decline of Aaron Judge.
I mean,
I think he's too good.
He's about to win his second consecutive MVP. I find it hard that they coincide, but I like it. It's fun. I like it.
Yeah, I'm into it. The thing that I think plays in Will's favor here, and yes, like Judge is having an amazing season, big guys don't necessarily have long baseball careers. Like, there's not really a great track record for really large individuals playing a long time at a high level in the major leagues. And Aaron Judge having the stretch that he's had already is kind of an anomaly for a guy of his size. Like, he's a massive dude.
People also forget he's 33 years old already.
Yeah, it took him a while
that
to get up to the
majors. That's also part of this.
So I don't hate it. Like, I think Will could be onto something there. Like, maybe Crochet has kind of sped up the process here for Aaron Judge, and maybe this will be his last dominant year. I mean, we say maybe, right? Like, the guy is on an incredible generational run here. Yeah, he's having a sick season.
Yeah, and if this is the end of the Judge Empire, then I'm going to have to trade him in my fantasy baseball keeper league where I've had him for years and could potentially be leading me to a second straight title this year. Also, before we go, some news just came in. Red Sox lineup for tonight.
Okay.
Leading off, Romy Gonzalez at first, Alex Bregman at third, Roman Anthony in the three-hole, DHing, Trevor Story at short in the cleanup spot, Nate Eaton against a lefty out there in center field, batting fifth, Jaron Duran sixth in left, Sedan Rafaela seventh, playing second base, moving in, as we've seen him do several times now against lefties. Hopefully he can start hitting as a second baseman. That this seems to be like some sort of mental block there for him. Carlos Narvaez catching, and then Justinson Garcia.
Okay,
password
unlocked.
Yeah, as I think we kind of expected that, right? He was going to play against the two lefties, so you know, a little bit of maybe a rough debut for him Friday. I think he's struck out three times, but he's back in there batting ninth tonight. So there's your lineup as the Red Sox go for the sweep.
And you mentioned the Rafaela part, and I think that is an interesting thing, how you said you hope he starts hitting at a second baseman. You've seen this before from different players where when they're moving around positions, it does sometimes affect them at the plate. And I think Rafaela, obviously one of the best center fielders in the game, probably more accustomed to being out there. That's probably where he wants to be, but I give him credit for being flexible.
Yeah, it was funny. Pre-game, someone asked Cora about it during the Orioles series. Like, hey, you know, Sedan Rafaela, maybe not hitting so great against, you know, as a second baseman, what's going on with there? And Cora was like, well, if someone could come up with the numbers and put it on my desk and show me, like, I guess we could talk about it. And then, like, the next day, I think Tim Healy put it out, was like, he's hitting, like, 162 as a second baseman, and he's almost 300 as a center fielder. So the numbers are there, Cora, so let's see. What's going on with that?
Also, I'm hitting 190 since the All-Star break, so they need him to get going.
Yeah, it's been nice to see, as a couple guys have slumped, other guys stepping up, and so the lineup overall, you don't really notice it, but you're right. Like, he is a guy you'd like to really get going again, because we've seen most of the season how valuable he can be when we know he's going to be going on the field, but when he gets it going at the plate too.
271 before the break. Down
he's got pop, man.
Yeah.
All right, guys, that's it for us.
That was fun.
Wrapping up, so thank you everyone for tuning in. Dan Ball coming up next.